21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Look up your chimney, the sky ain't blue, it's kind of yellow, you know it's true.
Oh, there they are, the Traveling Wilburys, telling you about climate change back there in 1970-something. I mean, it's amazing. So it's amazing. Actually, I think it was 80s. It was the 80s, yes, indeed. But, of course, we know there's no problem with our climate, right? Right. So we don't have to worry about that. This is 21st Century Radio. I'm what's left of Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD, hanging out in this part of the universe, and there are many universes. More than I thought. And our executive producer and research assistant is Lark Kortner. Our engineer is Noah Dankner. And we are talking to tonight one of my mentors, especially in this particular area of news, Joe Honig. He's our special correspondent on news of the world. And we've been paying attention to what's going on, especially with anti-Semitism. Hey, by the way, when someone did contact us and said, where did that story come from that I talked about, Fox 45 and Kill a Cop video? It was in today's Sunday newspaper. It was David Zurak. Yes, David Zurak, or Wick, sorry, Zurak. Kill a Cop video may mar WBFF's big plans. Yep, read it yourself. I didn't make that up. I know some people think I did, but I didn't. Did you think I made that story up?
Not me.
Oh, okay. Okay, you're not guilty.
Because actually, that's a more generous comment than what the reality is. In other words, you were being kind.
Yeah. Well, I had to be kind. That's my former employer, you know. Now, Paris. If anyone watched the news this morning and has watched the news for the last week or so, Paris has been really quite big in what's going on there. So let's talk a little bit about how you feel in regards to what has been going on in Paris and in regards to the individuals that were murdered and who's murdering them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's take one thing at a time.
Yep.
First of all, this will deal in direct reflection of my concept of diminished focus. What you see today was today, this week, and will certainly be news flashes, but you won't see those millions of people there. What comes next? And many of them will just be off saying we did it. But what is it that happened today? Number one, what you did not see on the general news, is that the Grand Mosque was wide open today with no big security deal or anything. But the Grand Synagogue was shut tight for the first time since World War II. Do you hear that?
Yes, sir.
With security everywhere for the first time since World War II, they found it necessary to close down the Grand Synagogue, not the Grand Mosque. And that would seem to be a measure of concern that nobody mentioned. But one additional thing that also did not come out as the upset over the kosher market thing took place was that this is hardly the first major event of attacks on Jews in synagogues in the past year. In the past year, there's a whole list of such attacks, but not on famous places necessarily, but individuals, people shot in museums, and this is well poured over into Belgium as well, where people of the Jewish faith have been attacked physically, or individually young girls. And this has got, there's a whole series of reports on this, but today raised to special prominence because it also included, or in a major share of news, Charlie Hebdo, the so-called satirical publication. And that all of a sudden became assaults on journalists. Mm-hmm. And it's the difficulty is that what does not get reported over and over and over, you heard the attack on journalists. Well, we've had a bunch of journalists killed in foreign countries, like what ISIS has done of the headings. But the anti-Semitic aspect doesn't really get to the top because, frankly, some people just get tired of it. And it's not good fortune in a sordid kind of way that that issue arose because of the events of the last several days. However, the idea that 5,000 Jews in France, where freedom really has been pervasive, found it safer and a good reason to move to Israel, where they feel they would be better protected. And that's all happened in recent months. So what we heard today about the kosher market was horrible. What we have not heard while it's been going on are some of these events I've just mentioned. And there are these roving gangs who are out there doing stuff. But what got to me today was to see Mr. Abbas from the Palestinian Authority marching arm in arm in the front row of this parade. He has not come down on Hamas or Hezbollah, although they corner him in a way. He doesn't dare offend them. And there was a little bit of hypocrisy, in other words. But what was interesting is what now? At the 9/11 event, massive people who were terribly shaken, as they should be, and today, as they should be. But remember, the next work day, most of those people will not be there because they can't. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's the question I asked. And the other thing I was concerned about, what if one of these nutcases could sneak in among this million of people who were marching? There was no clearance potential. And frankly, I was a little bit disturbed that the president could not join other country heads of state. He certainly got transportation and a ticket. And just to have Eric Holder there, because he's already there, so why don't you make this a stopover? That was a little bit disturbed. In other words, the whole thing has some rough edges that I found to be disturbing. Hypocrisy among them.
Here's something I find a little bit disturbing. Muslims are the most persecuted people.
Yes, that's the propaganda.
Now, excuse me. This reminds me of Psychology 101, in which when you hear people say things like, what they do is they project. The Muslims or Islam may be projecting here more about what they are doing to deflect any criticism on them as being the most persecuted people, when that can't possibly be true. If I'm wrong there, let me know.
Well, the fact is you can't prove it, and it's doubtful if it is true. But one of the questions one would ask is, why in the last not too many years has there been such a massive influx of people from Muslims from countries in the Middle East? Why have they fled there? What's the big problem? And it's a fact that those populations in France, Belgium, England have been swelling rather substantially. Now, let me point out that there's no reason why they should be forbidden to do that. Mm-hmm. The problem is, why? And just asking. I mean, my parents fled Ukraine because of pogroms. That means you get killed. and came to the United States. So I'm just curious as to why this has taken place, and is there any connection to the anti-Semitism that evolves? I mean, in a warped kind of a way, my thought was, thank God it wasn't a bunch of Jewish people who committed those crimes.
Yeah, well, I'll say. Yeah.
Because then it would become a universalized statement, mm-hmm. you know, those Jews.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure.
And Israel had to be behind. In fact, there is one far left publication that I get on the Internet suggesting that Mossad had something to do with this.
Hmm. Did you mention this one Jewish student in Belgium that what he just went through in regards to attending school?
Well, that's one example. I didn't mention it to you, but I mentioned it. But also, the Jews who were killed in the Belgian museum, or the drive-by shootings in Belgium. There's a whole vast array of these, either one of a kind or ten of a kind. That's not new. But once it happens to a publication in Paris, it becomes a little bit more special.
Mm-hmm.
And all that turnout today. I mean, the fact that they got people to turn out that way and reject, at least vocally, this kind of activity is encouraging, but hardly much for the future because, as my point of diminished focus, something else is going to come along. In the next couple of weeks, I have no idea what it is except the Super Bowl, that will foam over attention to what just occurred. Because, you know, a crowd in one place can't remain. As a kid, as a very young person, I was in that march when Dr. King made his dream speech. And that I was already sold on the idea of civil rights because I thought not to support that would to be uncivil.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I wasn't all that far away when he was speaking. I didn't have a total grasp of what it meant. But there was that million people moving down there in a good cause and everything else. But 2 days later, they weren't there. Mm-hmm. That's why I say, what could happen today? But what also worried me, if one of these nutcases were to worm his or her way into the crowd and do another event like that. I don't know if I mentioned to you that one of the things that these kinds of bombings and shootings prove is that you don't have to mount an army to fight against the non-Islamic or the non-Muhammad supporters or whatever it is who are crying out what they were doing, and you talked about the most persecuted people. You only have to do destabilizing events in otherwise powerful countries instead of mounting an army, because if you make the people live in fear, you've accomplished half your battle. And that's what they've accomplished.
They certainly
with events
have.
Like that, with throwing old men overboard from cruise ships,
yeah.
from killing old men at prayer, Paris, and all the rest of this. It's a destabilizing kind of thing.
Well,
and with all the speeches we make on how sad this is and we won't let them get away with it, sure they will.
No, well, yeah.
Because they die and become martyrs.
Well, going back to this, I just wanted to mention this because I wanted to make sure our listeners understood how this worked out. In Belgium, it was a girl. And she was the only Jewish pupil at this particular school in Brussels, and she was forced to leave. She was constantly harassed by her Muslim classmates. They said, listen to this. It said, the school tried to help, but to no avail. The harassment went on. I mean, how hard did they try to help? Well, anyway, the point I'm trying to make is I can't believe Muslims are the most persecuted people in the world. Now, but I do know this, that there are certain fundamentalist Christians that would do the same thing that the Muslims would do in regards to violence, because they do believe that anyone who doesn't believe what they believe really doesn't deserve to be here on planet Earth, needs to be exited to heaven or elsewhere. We need to take a break. Is that correct? Yes, it is. Our guest is Joe Honig, our correspondent on the news. And Joe welcomes your comments. Again, complaints by email at joehonig@gmail.com. Joe, when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the police shootings of unarmed black young men, okay?
All right.
Okay.
Hi, this is Stephen Schwartz, and it's a pleasure to be here tonight talking with Bob Hieronymus on one of the most exciting radio programs that I know in the country. 21st Century Radio is really a place where you will get good information from things that matter in your life and that will give you an insight into who you are and why you're here.
Hey, thank you, Dr. Schwartz. Boy, brilliant man, brilliant man. Done some very important work. There they go. Who just ran out of here? Hey, friends, a little while ago we heard Quiet Village. I wanted to tell you that. You know, my producer pulls out a lot of these real winners. I haven't heard them for such a long time. Okay. Joe, confirming your diminished focus concept, let's turn attention to the recent spate of protests over police shootings of unarmed black young men. You wrote a column accusing media of major failures.
Absolutely. The problem, there's a bunch of problems. The idea, nobody should support or cleanse the act of any public police enforcement person doing anything that, A, breaks the rules, either from a human standpoint, from a legal standpoint, of killing someone that should be seen as an innocent victim rather than a criminal. Now, this whole matter of the young man in Ferguson arose, and the dimensions or different stories that arose. I mean, it's tragic, no question about it. But the point was, everything became a rumor that became things that got out of control. Now, I feel for the young man's parents. I feel for the kid who was killed. But the fact of the matter is, I don't know the facts of the matter. And I don't know what happened. I know it shouldn't have happened, either because he shouldn't have done something wrong or the cop involved shouldn't have done something wrong. But the suggestion is, from the far-left media that I get, is this is just a normal, everyday affair across the country. So I might ask some of these folks who put out this stuff, who do you call if your house is being invaded and your wife's attacked? Now,
what's their
answer? You don't call the Boy Scouts. And secondly, when they put out data about how many people were killed by cops, these studies don't always tell the picture of why were they killed, what had they done. One of the things I saw today was that hundreds are killed every day by cops when the individuals were not guilty of doing anything wrong, or some other mindless reason. And I look for the data to prove that. I also know that 1,500 cops have been killed in the last several years in the course of doing their duties. I don't know if they're all nice guys or all committing crimes themselves. The point I'm making is people were radicalized into all these protest marches by virtue of rumor and agitation. Not that they shouldn't get upset and demand answers, but people who have no idea what actually occurred believe whatever propaganda is put out there and all of a sudden become protesters, and they're out in the streets. So what did the media fail to do? Well, whenever I see what happens here, having been a marcher and protester and civil rights myself, I know that there became a lot of these protests in the streets, and especially when Dr. King was assassinated. And when I think about that night, it was April 4th, 1968, and it will never leave me. And my dad was involved in the civil rights campaign as well. As if somebody offered a pass to these protesters, just in my dad's case, they destroyed everything he had worked for years to build in his little business. He had a nice delicatessen that made damn good corned beef and pastrami, and it was destroyed 10 nights in a row. 10 nights in a row. Even though we could have put our credentials for fighting for civil rights with anybody's. Now, there was no prosecution of anybody. There was no civilian review board demanding that my dad's business and hundreds of other businesses in Baltimore, where I was at the time, should be arrested or anything. And there was fear, actually, of going against the protesters. Mm-hmm. And when I heard about what was going on in Baltimore and called the police from where I was living out in suburban Washington, they said, "Don't worry, we have an eye on Mr. Honig." Well, yeah, they were protecting him personally from being attacked, but his business was his life. That's what he built on his own. No government loans, no nothing. And he was not alone.
Yeah, I know.
Many have fought these battles courageously, often sacrificing their own lives. And yet this occurred, and comes now Ferguson, Missouri, or there was the incident in Florida about a guy named Zimmerman who was, I forget what he did, but he allegedly killed this young man. He apparently did, but they say he had no right to attack him, although Zimmerman said he was being attacked. And he was not, he was found innocent, whether he was or not. He may be the worst son of a gun in the world. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But on the basis of rumor that got spread everywhere, he was guilty without the idea of what we call a trial. And so when I hear that cops are killing mostly blacks and just plain old kids doing their job, playing or whatever they're doing, that the cops apparently do that almost for the fun of it, I don't believe it. And I when rumor takes over for facts, then we are indeed dangerous. And these protesters, all who have the absolute right to protest in the streets, they don't have the right to destroy.
That's right.
And that's where this thing gets out of hand. And that's how the thing in Ferguson got going. And we don't think too much of it now because we got stuff going on in France and elsewhere. So the media have failed miserably in bringing to readers the point that so much has occurred based on rumor without court trial, and the media have not dealt with that aspect of the livelihoods. I read one editorialist say, well, it's not as bad as you think because all these businesses have business interruption insurance. How about business destruction insurance? But an editor had the gall to say, well, you know, business interruption insurance would take care of it. I don't know whatever happened to don't fire, scream fire in a crowded theater when there isn't any. And this is where I claim the media have done and are continuing not to deal with this specific subject about what happened. But I do remember the words I heard that day in 1963. And part of King's speech to the world included the following: "But there is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. in the process of gaining our rightful place. We must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. Mm-hmm. Well, some people forgot that part of his speech, and that includes the media. And by the way, prejudice does not only run to black people.
That's for certain. That's for certain. You know, I think there's Dr. King, I think, borrowed a little bit of that philosophy from Gandhi and others.
He was a great man. He's the guy that took the chances.
Yep.
Along with three young Jewish boys who were killed on their way to Mississippi.
Oh,
during that battle.
There's another aspect that my wife has brought up to me a number of times, several times, in regards to what has been happening to the police in our country being militarized. That is, the armed forces are making available to them for free some pretty considerable large battlefield-type weaponry, and actually becoming part of our military. Some of the police are becoming part of our military. And my wife was actually at a meeting in which the family was asked to donate a certain amount of money to help foster this program of getting these larger weaponry. Which, fortunately, the family said no to, because they could see what was happening. Certain elements within the police force have become militarized around the country. And perhaps this may be one of the reasons why some of people of different colors, when they see some of these things happen. Do you remember Rizzo up in Philadelphia?
Of course.
Well, I remember being up there in Philadelphia, standing there by myself with a few policemen. And here comes a tank, riding down, I don't know, it was Arch Street or whatever. But I thought I was in another country, another world. And I turned to the policeman and I said, how many tanks you got? And they said, well, we only got one. But it's that kind of concept and of course Rizzo was I think it's not unfair to say there was a certain amount of corruption.
He was a nasty SOB.
Well, he certainly could be that, but he felt that meeting force with mega force was the way to do it. Now, obviously. That is happening in our country, but I don't know the real scale of it. But I do know that other people are pointing to the fact that our policemen are become militarized by having, it'll be hell if all of a sudden we start seeing them carrying around bazookas and things of that nature.
Well, let me ask this. I'm a darn good critic of things, but I have always been taught that whatever I criticize, I should have ready an alternative to the situation that might help resolve an issue. In other words, if you know something's wrong, how do you want to make it right? So I should have an answer for that. And as much as critical as I am of very often individual police actions, I have suggestions, depending upon where it occurs, to not necessarily cure it, because I'm not a doctor for policemen, but how we can begin to resolve issues. The first thing you stop doing is universalizing the issue as if all cops are out to get you. And if some places a guy or even a woman gets up and says, what we need here is tough weapons to deal with agitators, and we need this heavy weaponry so people come threaten people, we can get rid of them. People say those things. Now, I don't share that, but I've got to say, what do you do if your life is endangered by somebody who, even if they don't have a gun, they have brute strength on a small person. What should a cop do if he comes upon a scene like that? Now, I can't answer that, but I can tell you, if you don't know the answer, you got to be very careful in discerning all the facts. I know that some people want to militarize, that's the term, that's the catchword right now, about militarizing police forces. Now, I've watched it. I live in a lovely community out in western Washington. It ain't going to happen there, but it happens that 3 years ago one cop did really do a very bad thing that caused the death of a mentally disturbed person. And believe me, that remains a headline affair. And he was displaced, or rather investigated and everything else. But there's a whole civilians police commission to talk about and try to resolve issues without accusing people of things they don't know have occurred or the reason for their occurrence. I've read four different ways about how this young man died at the hands of cops in Ferguson. But I've also now watched how agitators have moved crowds to so protest things that they made it okay to break into stores and break windows and cause other damage. And if they got caught, they shouldn't be prosecuted because they had a right to be upset. So I have not seen reliable data that those same people are willing to deal with about how many cops have been killed. And it turns out hundreds have in the last 10 years. And I don't know who did it, how they did it, just the same as I don't know the two cases, particularly that they've been dealing with police action about two young men. And the next part is that it's all racially motivated. Well, I've seen people who are white, Hispanic, and otherwise run into difficulty with cops where they should have been in difficulty, and their race didn't make a darn bit of difference. So I guess what I'm saying now is, first, let's organize the facts of what really has occurred, and let's stop accusing the whole police force as if everybody who's a cop is out to get you.
Well, everything you've said, I agree with. I don't have problems with that at all. But we have some serious problems in the city of Baltimore, which have been making national news, in which other people have been beaten and killed, and by police.
Yeah.
And have been finally brought to justice, but it took quite a long time because we were not allowed to know exactly what was going on. There were rules and regulations that got in our way from us really finding out. We would not be told. We didn't even know that these things were happening in our city. But there is we have had a few renegade cops here in the city of Baltimore. And that obviously that does not mean that all of them or even half or you know, it's obvious, maybe it's minuscule, but there are definitely a few. And they really need to be watched, because they've gotten away with things, considerable things, damage to people who were totally innocent. Even some of them, people that they killed had brain damage. That is, that they didn't even know what was going on when they got it. Well, time out here on the playing field. When we come back, oh, goodness gracious, I'll figure out exactly where we're going when we do come back here with Joe Honig.
Hello, this is Dr. John Brandenburg, nuclear physicist and author of Life and Death on Mars on 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. 21st Century Radio, your source for the hidden truths of reality.
Well, thank you, John. Boy, it's been a long time since we've heard from John. Right there, Dr. Kortner?
Yeah.
Yes, it's true. All right, our guest is Joe Honig. And, Joe, in regards to the police situation, how should police and their political bosses rethink their relationships with citizens in general?
Well, I'm dealing with a subject like that. I really believe that some reorientation of police chiefs needs to be done to make them, not make them, but offer them the opportunity to be involved in citizen commissions that don't have the right to hire, fire cops, but so that when issues arise, there is a means for public information that doesn't distort what agitators provide the public. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing out in Bainbridge Island. And I think more communities are doing this. And there needs to be more talking with citizens groups and ask for suggestions for things. It doesn't mean the cops have to be less strong or weak in enforcement, but perhaps there's a need for training programs in every department, I don't care where it is, how to deal with the public in such a way that you don't lose your police standing, but people can feel like they're part of the enforcement action themselves. Now, that doesn't mean everybody you run into who's ready to beat you over the head is going to understand that kind of effort. But, look, you know that when you get to talk to somebody personally, it does more good than just solving or believing everything you read in the newspaper.
Absolutely, yeah.
But the problem is, among other problems, that most police critics want to accuse them of every damn thing you can think of, even if they didn't see anything happen. And unfortunately, many of the cops, you know, they're not exactly overpaid, respond negatively and don't pay much enough attention. And this requires some management of a city to solicit programs or solicit citizen comment, but only from those people who may have been involved in a situation, not some agitating partisan from a city. Now, that's a good general statement, but it's not the solution. But one thing I know is people get a lot more solved when they're talking with each other and developing agenda that can be implemented between cops and the civilian people in a way that's productive. Because first, if you just accuse and don't come in with ideas, that's no good either. And that, unfortunately, is what's going on. That doesn't deal with the whole situation. But the thing about any negotiation is that you have to start. And if I were here in Baltimore, my proposal would be to put together a couple of people. Let's see if we can put together some suggestions in cooperation with the police chief and his crew to see what might be done to open communication and maybe create some improvements. Because I'll tell you one final thing, since we're running out of time, is cops also do an awful lot of good in communities that have nothing to do with arresting people. Very often they're involved in fundraising for poor people, or they do a lot of other actions that most people don't find out about, and they seldom have a PR department to tell the world about it, or most of them just don't want to tell the world. But they do a lot of things to help people as well. All you hear is the bad side. So there is a need for communication. That's the general wonderful word. And that can only happen if somebody in charge, called a mayor or a city council, sets up the opportunity for people to come together and put together an agenda of what they feel might be useful in explaining police mission and operation to the people most affected, and that's you and me.
do you think that the police should be wearing cameras?
Yeah, I can tell you why. Because the camera takes pictures of what the cop does, too.
Exactly. That's
Pardon
right.
Me?
Exactly. Why do you think there are so many police officers who are against it? They got it.
I believe that too many cops think that no matter what they do, they'll be wrong. Mm. And this is which requires something called leadership. To do it, we're going to be doing it out in Seattle. But it's important to document actions that bring you into conflict with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, the cameras, I think the cops who reject it are concerned that it's like a self-conviction or a self-indicting mechanism.
Well,
but I can't speak for all of them.
Well,
you asked me my opinion. I think it's a good idea.
I agree. I think I know why some of them don't want to wear them, because we've seen a lot of crazy things. There have been a few very bad cops in the city of Baltimore, and they have really left their mark on the general public, who just thought, gosh, they never thought of these policemen as being especially brutal with people.
Right.
That may either dementia or they're really imbalanced in one way or the other. I'm not talking about and take I've been in situations myself when I having a long hair and a beard. I was doing a mural at Johns Hopkins University, and I was up there, and all of a sudden the police come through the door and they said, Hieronymus, we just heard you had a gun, and you were going to...
Serious?
Yes. We heard you didn't have a gun, and you were going to shoot this janitor. And I said, what? I said, what are you talking about? He says, yeah. And I said, please, bring the janitor here. And they did, of course. I said, search me. Search everything. Search everything. There's no way you're going to find a gun here, and I didn't even know you guys were coming. And so, of course, they did. They did. And I said, you know what my gun was? I had a pipe. I had a pipe in my belt. You know how in the old days, back there 40 years ago, you put your pipe into your little belt, and this guy thought it was a gun. But they were ready to take me away. And I was working all night long, because I worked all night long for like 6 months at Johns Hopkins University doing this mural at night.
Uh-huh.
And so everyone knew that I was there, and they knew that what kind of person I was. But I almost got locked up for nothing. So crazy
now,
things like these can happen.
Whose fault was that?
Pardon me?
I said, whose fault was that?
Well, and that it was the janitor's fault,
right?
And after the police searched everything I had, they apologized and they said, "Well, we really didn't think so." I said, "Well, you know, but what you did, you just took a couple hours of my life away when I was painting this mural, and now I feel like hell, and I don't feel like working anymore, and I've got to work, because if I don't work, I don't get paid, and I go hungry." Well, that didn't get me anywhere, but I'm being reasonable about it. I'm sorry I took so long to do that, but I've had personal experience with this. And in Baltimore especially, you know, if you had long hair and a beard there, you were anyone could beat you up. It was allowed.
Have you had any positive experiences?
Sure, but not...
Okay.
Yes, but especially with policemen, because I work with policemen.
Yeah.
We support various... I personally... raise money, et cetera, for them, et cetera.
Right.
So, yes, indeed, I know that part, too. But some can cause more trouble than it's worth. Now, we only got a couple minutes, and I'm sorry I even got into that. But there was another aspect of it, too. What would you like to do with these next couple of minutes we got left? What would you like to say?
I would like to say that I would wish people, all people, and certainly the sophisticated people who listen to your program, would begin to tone down the rhetoric, read more information of people with whom they disagree, to see what their points of view might be, and take a second or a time more before throwing out almost libelous commentary about others, including politicians, and get more than one side of every story.
Mm-hmm.
And then start talking to each other more nicely.
I always thought that was the American way, Joe.
Well, I don't know what the American way is, because that depends on circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
If we're attacked, the American way is to fight back. On the other hand, if you find that people are actually doing some nice things, you should also talk about that and not just how terrible they are, including cops.
Right.
Because my first really terrible experience with a person in authority was when I was 5 years old and was not permitted to eat lunch in a public school because I was the only Jew in the school. Believe it or not.
I believe it.
And it was because of that that my mother pulled me out of there. You know what the Talmudical Academy is?
Yes, sir.
And put me in that school, which means that this little kid had to take public transportation across town to go to school there, where I spent 9.5 years. Got a damn good education, by the way.
We are out of time, unfortunately, Joe. Well, look forward to having you on again, 21st Century Radio, and we can continue.
Well, I hope I was good enough for your program, and I really appreciate being asked. And please give my best. You got a great production team.
Thank you very much.
Connected with stimulating talk and breaking news on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Sal Giangrasso. Just in.